Hey everyone, I'm Nick, and this is Dyslexia Journey, where we help you support the dyslexic kid in your life. And today's episode is a special episode. We're happy to be able to replay an interview that I did on a different show a couple months ago, and that show is called A New Perspective with Tim Sutton, and we are very pleased to be able to provide that interview to you on our channel and in our podcast feed today. So without further ado, here it is.
I needed to know what was wrong. I had to find out what it was. And
the first thing I wanted to have is no toxic cleaning products.
Just because you have brain change doesn't mean you can't still do things. You may do it differently. You might need more time.
I decided to turn my disability into my ability, and around 7th and 8th grade, I started playing able-bodied sports.
If we were knowledgeable, if we were educated, we would have solved science earlier.
You battle, and you battle for every single inch of health.
A New Perspective, hosted by Tim Sutton.
This broadcast is produced by Griffo Productions. Brought to you by A Better Understanding, giving you a better understanding.
Hey, everybody, this is Tim Sutton bringing you a new perspective. Glad to have you back. We have covered a lot of topics over the last few episodes. I know it's been a brief pause in things as life gets busy sometimes. But I wanted to get back on here and try to educate myself and educate you. If you're not familiar with me, I'm a retired law enforcement officer, 33 years. Over half of that time was spent working with individuals with disabilities and training officers to understand various types of disabilities that are out there. So when we get the call to respond, we can get there and hopefully take care of the problem, because we always revert back to our training. But if you haven't been trained on any type of disability, you do the best you can. So the job, my job was to get out there and train officers to hopefully do their job more effectively. Currently still teaching. I've got a class coming up at the end of this week, and looking forward to educate some other officers. But as I'm retired, I've gotten more active in the disability community, and I'm educating myself and learning so much. And one thing that's really always concerned me is invisible disabilities. These issues where you look at somebody and you can't tell that there's something different or something they're struggling with. And I had the opportunity and through my producer, Refer Productions, Anthony was able to put me in touch with a gentleman, and I've been reading up and I've been listening and watching some videos, because there's something out there that you hear a lot about, but many people don't know anything about it. And so many people are affected by it. And hopefully my guest, Nicholas Salter, will come on and talk about what's going on in his life, what went on in his life. But we're going to talk about dyslexia and his dyslexia. And I believe he's got a child with dyslexia. But it researching it has amazed me how prevalent it is, and has really raised my eyebrows. But I'd like to bring on Nicholas and talk about what's going on in his life and hopefully learn something, and you all can learn something as well.
Hello, Tim. Thank you.
Hey, I appreciate you coming and being here with me tonight. I have spent the day looking at videos, watching you, just sharing the information that you have. And give us a little bit about your background, what you do for a living, and what kind of work, and anything else you want to let us know. I know you've got a child with dyslexia as well.
Yeah, sure. So I live in Colorado. I'm a software engineer. That's my day job. And I don't actually have dyslexia myself. So this has been a journey of discovery, through our daughter, really. So,
oh, okay.
Yeah. So neither my wife nor I actually.
Oh, I was on the impression that you did. I'm sorry.
That's okay. No problem. I don't mind. It's really been a journey of discovery, for both my wife and me, because neither of us had it. Neither of us.
Oh, wow.
Until our daughter, showed pretty early on some difficulty with reading, and this was in first grade, actually, And she was really struggling. This is kind of the age. So this is about, she was about 6 years old. And this is, you know, we, my wife and I were both pretty well educated. We both are interested in education. We felt pretty confident as parents, but even us, and we knew about dyslexia sort of in theory, right? But it took us still several years to really realize that that's what our daughter had. And which is really kind of absurd to think about, because there's actually one out of every five people has dyslexia. It's about 20% of the population, 15 to 20%, which, you know, you wouldn't really realize because people don't talk about it that much. And, you know, maybe there's a little bit less stigma around it than there used to be. But I think it's really still misunderstood and I think really still underdiagnosed. And so, you know, because of our experience, where we you know, it took us so long to identify what was going on with our daughter and to get her the sort of accommodations and remediation work that she needed to be successful in school. My wife, Sunny, and I decided that we wanted to help educate other people out there about dyslexia, because it's something that affects so many people, and that there just isn't enough information out there for other parents. And really we broadened a little bit. You know, we started sort of really trying to educate parents, and it turns out there's a lot of dyslexic adults who are interested in what we have to say as well. So really educating everyone about this, like you said, kind of silent, invisible disability.
Right. Wow. That's when you started noticing problems with your child, was that even in your mind that that's what it could be prior to the diagnosis, or is that something, was it like a revelation when the diagnosis came about?
I think by the time we got the diagnosis, which really wasn't until she was in, I think, the end of fourth grade, so maybe three and a half years later, it was a relief, actually, because we knew, we knew she was a smart kid. We could tell the ways that she talks, the way she interacts with the world. She just wasn't able to demonstrate it. And so we knew there was something going on. And so when we finally had her assessed at the end of fourth grade, it really was a relief. I mean, I think we thought about dyslexia being a possibility, and that's why we eventually did take her to an educational psychologist to assess. So it wasn't a total surprise. It was really much more of a relief to know that, okay, this is, you know, this actually explains everything. Right. Right. And you know, interviewed other dyslexic adults on our show, and they all say the same thing. It's that moment of realization that, oh, like, I'm not dumb. I'm not lazy. Right. Like, my brain just works differently from other people.
Yeah. Do you find that there's a lot of denial by parents about, oh no, my child does not have dyslexia? Or, yeah, I know with autism, a lot of times in the beginning, many times there's a lot of denial. Do you find that with dyslexia?
I think so. I mean, certainly in our case, I wanted to say if it was, I mean, denial is an interesting word. I think maybe subconsciously, yes, actually. I think dyslexia is maybe not as stigmatized as autism is still, perhaps. But it's the kind of thing where as a parent, you don't want there to be something, quote, wrong with your kid, right?
Right.
And even though dyslexia, and this is a whole other discussion we can get into, is, you know, is it actually a disability, or is it just a brain difference? But still, it is something that makes life harder for people. It makes school harder. It makes work harder. It makes daily life harder. Anything that involves reading and writing, really. And so, yeah, I think there probably is some amount of denial there. Like, you just, you know, you want things to be easy for your kid.
Right. Yeah. I mean, nobody wants to see their child struggle. And obviously there's going to be a little bit of a struggle, but there's nothing you can't overcome. And then having a name to put with it, and finding resources. Do you find in the school system, I know you're in Colorado, but in the school system, is there a lot of support? Are there a lot of resources?
There is yes and no. So the dyslexia is a protected disability under the Americans with Disabilities Act. So schools are required to provide reasonable accommodations. So once you are diagnosed, then schools are required to give you accommodations like extra time on exams and use of a computer to type instead of having to write things by hand. That sort of thing. I would say, I don't want to criticize schools and teachers. Like almost every teacher that my daughter has had has been great and well-intentioned. I think that it's overlooked for a lot of reasons. The first aspect is identification. And I think that unless a kid is doing very badly, it seems to generally be overlooked. So if a kid's doing kind of average, it's not really going to be brought to their attention, and they're kind of just going to muddle through. And so that's especially the case with people who are, I don't like the term smart or intelligent, but people who maybe can demonstrate a high IQ, but then also have dyslexia, they're going to be able to compensate for that really well in school. And so they'll be able to maybe do average or even above average, but not nearly anywhere close to their potential of how they could do. And so it tends to get overlooked. Like there are only a few states that actually require assessing every child for dyslexia.
Oh, okay.
Colorado is not one of them. There's been some work at the state level to try to get that instituted, but school systems and teachers groups are kind of resistant to that because and I understand their perspective. It's another thing that they'd have to do that they're not particularly trained to do.
Well, why not train them to pick up on it? And I think part of that is if you train them to pick up on it, they're going to start picking up on it. And then they've got to make reasonable accommodations, and they don't really want to have to, take that extra step.
Yeah. And again,
that's my philosophy.
Yeah. I totally agree with you. And again, I mean, almost every teacher out there is working very hard. I really do admire, like, I could never be a classroom teacher. The amount of work they do, the amount of multitasking that they do in the classroom and the work they do at home. So, I don't want to criticize any teachers. I think it is more of a systemic issue that needs to be done with training at the school district level.
Right. And one thing, I was watching one of your videos, you were talking about the timed tests that kids have to take. And you said a reasonable accommodation, maybe like time and a half. If it takes, if it's an hour to take the test, maybe give them an hour and a half. But that's one thing I always dreaded, because it's having that timer on, and it's stressful enough, but dealing with dyslexia, I can only imagine the stress that comes along with that while you're trying to process those questions and read all that stuff. It's got to be such a stressor.
Yeah, and that's really a pet peeve of mine, because it's so artificial. I mean, in the real world, there are very few circumstances where it really matters whether you can do something in an hour or an hour and a half.
Right.
And so, I mean, maybe in very specific things, like, okay, in law enforcement, which is your background, you have to be able to demonstrate quick decision making, perhaps. Right. But that's very specific. Most situations, does it matter if you can solve 30 equations in an hour or an hour and a half? It doesn't matter. And so, there's a lot of, I think, reasons why we've ended up in this kind of environment where everything is so time pressured. But I honestly wouldn't mind if everyone got the time they needed, regardless of diagnosis.
Yeah, and you look at the SATs. I mean, taking the SAT, it's timed. Yeah. And I've always been a terrible tester like that. And I think too much into the questions. And, you know, I second guess myself, and I can only imagine if with dyslexia on top of that, if you have that, always second guessing yourself, then you go back and reread it and you're trying to figure out exactly what, you know, I just remember those days for me was, they were exhausting.
Yeah.
That's when it really tipped me off. I'm thinking, okay, now I have to read something that I read it again. I remember in college, I would be reading and I would take a highlighter and I'd go through it. Next thing you know, I come back and I've got a different color highlighter and I'm reading it all again, highlighting this. And I'll take a red pen, come back and read it just to get it to sink in. So kind of got, I mean, listen to this and learn about this kind of gets me thinking myself about even today. I had a brief period where I would sit and read some books, but reading was not that enjoyable to me. Mm-hmm. And I felt like I would read it and just not even remember what I read.
Yeah, that's really interesting. You know, one of the guests we had on our show recently, Cliff Weitzman, he's the founder and CEO of Speechify, which is a really interesting company helping dyslexic people out there and anyone else who wants stuff read to them. He used the analogy. He said for someone with dyslexia, reading one sentence takes the same brain power as doing a long division problem in your head.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah.
It's work. Because he was talking about telling me to, you know, 10 divided by whatever or this.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know, you're trying to process all that. And yeah, I can see where that comes in. I'll tell you, interesting talking about law enforcement. When I first started, I think I was 2 years into it. I know a girl went through the academy. And I know there are different types of dyslexia. There are a few different types. But apparently she had dyslexia. And yeah, you wonder, okay, well, if she's trying to pull a car over, is she going to be reading the, you know, I don't know if this is an aspect of it. Is she going to be reading the tag backwards, the license plate backwards, or is that something that actually happens in some forms of dyslexia? Reading,
I think, yeah, for some people, I think it is. That's sort of the like stereotypical impression of dyslexia in the popular culture, right? Like, you read the words backwards.
Right.
Or you read the sentence backwards. And I think there's some truth to that. Like what we've noticed with our daughter and then with other people we've spoken with, and I'll give sort of a long-winded answer to this, which is that people with dyslexia, it is a brain difference, and they tend to have very strong visual spatial skills. And so they are able to kind of, you know, rotate things in their mind. And so two people with dyslexia, often they can actually read upside down as well as they can read right side up.
Oh, wow.
Okay. Or they can read backwards as well as they can read forwards. Like, it's kind of the same to them. And so it's actually almost a whole different way of looking at the world, because they're like, and that's why they often mix up letters, because, you know, a lowercase b and a lowercase d.
Right.
Way versus that way, like, they can just sort of flip that in their mind and it's the same thing. Right. Whereas those of us without, you know, sometimes we talk about it as a dyslexia superpower, the visual spatial skills, those of us without that superpower, right, like, can't do that quick rotation in our head.
Right.
And so there is some truth to like mixing up the letters, reading stuff backwards. But that's really only a small aspect of the whole scope of what dyslexia is.
Okay, because I'd tell you what, that female police officer, she ended up being one of the best police officers out there. Excelled at that job. But I've often read stuff and other people read the same thing. And it's, in my mind, I'm thinking, did we just read the same thing? Because I didn't get anything out of it that they're talking about. But I mean, you know, and you talk about superpowers. You know, I often refer to, you know, autism. I said, most people, and that's one thing I wanted to ask you. Autism, many times you find that they have a couple things that they're very, very good at.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell families, I say, you know, where would our country be without autism? I say, how many of those rockets that they set off going to space would have made it had autism not been involved? Do you find that people with dyslexia sometimes have certain super abilities or things that they're really good at?
Yeah, for sure. There's a really good book that has been written by a couple of medical doctors called The Dyslexic Advantage. I think I'm going to get their names right. It's Brock and Fernette Eide. I think they're both medical doctors. It's a really good book. They go through they start with like, okay, there's actually measurable structural differences in the brain between people with dyslexia and people who don't have dyslexia that you can see like on MRIs and stuff. And then they go through sort of all the different traits that are kind of associated with people with dyslexia. And it's really impressive the kind of advantages they talk about. I mean, one of them are the visual spatial skills that I've talked about. Okay. And we've noticed that like with our daughter, she always knows where everything in the house is. Like I lose my phone, she's like, oh yeah, that's like on the dining room table. You know, even though she wasn't like trying to remember where it is, she just has this really good sense of where things are in 3D space. And that's shown, there's been actual studies, like people with dyslexia do better on tests that test sort of 3D spatial abilities than people with dyslexia. They're also really good at sort of entrepreneurial skills. There's some very famous dyslexics who are successful entrepreneurs like Richard Branson.
I saw that too.
That's the best example. Also, we talked about this on our show recently, the founder of IKEA, but was dyslexic. And if you think about it, that, you know, the way IKEA operates is very visually, spatially oriented. Okay. The furniture all comes in these flat boxes.
Right. Oh, yeah.
And then you have to
kind of pack it back up in there.
Exactly. Takes a dyslexic person to do that. There's other abilities. I think dyslexic are often very good at holistic thinking, we call it. Really like putting, you know, taking it, you know, different pieces of information and putting it together in ways that people like me, who are more of a linear thinker, might not see connections between disparate kinds of things.
Do you see a big impact with the dyslexia where it comes to numbers, or is it mostly the reading?
It's interesting. There's technically another condition called dyscalculia, I think. Which is when people have kind of the similar trouble that dyslexics have with words that they have with numbers. I think that anecdotally, like my daughter is quite good at math with appropriate accommodation. So like she struggles with word problems unless they're like read to her or sort of explained to her. Like she has trouble like reading a word problem and then realizing what they're trying to say.
Right.
But in terms of the logic and the connections, you know, that comes easily to her. But then she does, and I've seen this, I think this is generally true for people with dyslexia, is that they tend to make kind of arithmetic mistakes maybe. They tend to do, maybe they'll understand, you know, they'll get the concepts right away, but then when it comes to actually writing down the steps in order, that's a struggle for them. And so they'll make, you know, arithmetic mistakes. And so one of the common accommodations for people with dyslexia is to actually always be able to use a calculator so that they don't have to do those kind of things. Otherwise, they resort, I think part of it is just resisting writing things down because the writing is so difficult for them.
It's exhausting.
Yeah. It's exhausting. So they'll try to do more calculations in their head, and then they'll kind of make mistakes.
I can't imagine an average day in school for somebody with dyslexia and how, man, they come home, get off the bus, and they're probably just exhausted. And I wonder how many people are at colleges who they know something's going on and it's such a struggle, but they still persevere and they push and push and push and get through college. I just can't imagine how exhausting that has to be.
Yeah, it is. I mean, yeah, my daughter comes home from school and sleeps sometimes. I mean, it's just mentally and then physically exhausting, really.
Yeah, and you know, a lot of parents are thinking that the child's lazy, they just don't want to do anything.
Right.
you know, and think about how many undiagnosed are out there, and they're having to deal with the parents or parents that don't pick up on some of that and try to take them and find out what's going on.
Yeah, that's one of the things that really frustrates me the most about this, and really one of the reasons we started this Dyslexia Journey show that we do, is because there's still just, I feel like there's so many people who are just not diagnosed.
Right.
And, you know, we are, I guess, privileged that we were able to diagnose her. And it wasn't, you know, it was both that we were pretty well educated. We knew kind of what to look for. And then also, honestly, that we had the money to pay for our private assessment because the school didn't diagnose her. And it wasn't cheap. I mean, it was like a couple thousand dollars.
Right.
And that's not right. Like, you shouldn't need a couple thousand dollars to get your child the accommodations that they need at school.
I mean, that's the worst, man. I mean, I think, you know, yeah, they should be trained on it. It's like the stuff I teach law enforcement. Law enforcement, yeah, we're training all the time, but, you know, I go out there trying to train the autism, intellectual disability, Alzheimer's, dementia. But when people look at it on pieces of paper, you know, agencies are like, well, nah, but yeah, active shooters, they're big. Let's do that training. They don't realize how important what I'm trying to pass on to them. It's very easy to misinterpret a behavior and do something wrong. And then you're playing catch up on, oh, I guess we should have trained them. And again, yeah, teachers need to be educated to pick up on these things. But again, do their supervisors, the school board, really want teachers picking up on it? And I guess stirring the pot, getting the parents. So we're saying that, you know, this person's child is possibly dyslexic and leaves a negative image. So they don't want the teachers trained.
Right. Yeah. And there's a lot of, I mean, I think there's a lot more discussion of neurodiversity in general. That's sort of the term that people use to kind of, you know, lump. It's really, when people say neurodiversity, they're talking about generally autism, dyslexia, and ADHD, right? And there is some overlap there. But they are three very distinct things. And I think we did interview one person, who a while ago, who said, you know, whenever she tells someone she has dyslexia, they say, oh, well, you really just have ADHD. She's like, no, I really don't. I actually just have dyslexia.
No, but the thing is that people with autism can have dyslexia. They can have ADHD. You can have two of them, one of them, whatever, but it still needs to be addressed. But if you're going to turn a blind eye on it, I know here in my county, it's under certain situations, if the school says they cannot provide for your child, the county actually has to pay for them to go to a specialized school, which the last I checked, one of them is about $65,000 a year. So the schools don't want to admit that they can't take care of your child.
Right.
They'll do it. You know, they'll send notes home telling parents everything's great. They're doing a wonderful job. Their social skills are great. And we're in a situation, and the mom actually sat off to the side for 2 weeks watching her daughter at recess go dig in the dirt. And she kept getting these glowing notes on about how her daughter was interacting with the other kids, playing with the other kids. So social skills are great. Well, you know where she's going to a specialized school now, but yet schools don't want to admit that somebody needs accommodations.
Right.
And it's just such a disservice. And I admire you for taking that stand and pushing. We need more parents like that. They're going to do that for the kids. And, you know, I can only imagine how it is not being diagnosed, going to school, being scared to death to have to read out loud and things like that. And not just, well, the child doesn't want to participate, you know, so we'll dock them a couple points here or there. But understand there is something going on that the child doesn't have any control over, and let's do the best we can to deal with it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's really just about recognizing.
Yeah.
I mean, at root, I think it's just about recognizing and you know, acknowledging and appreciating everyone's differences. Identifying someone with dyslexia doesn't mean we have to pathologize it, but it's a helpful way to say, okay, this person, you know, has trouble with reading and writing. Let's, How can we help them? Like that's really all we're asking for.
And that's what the teachers and everybody should be there for anyway. So, well, Nicholas, I want to thank you for coming on and talk to me. You've opened my eyes, and this is not something I've every day I'm learning about some other thing out there that it's becoming more prevalent. And my hope is to just educate people and give them a new perspective on disability community, other people who are making an impact on the disability community, you know, ADA and things like that. Just making sure people understand that every single person matters. And I tell people when I was a police officer, I wasn't sworn to protect this group or that group. I was sworn to protect every group. So why not learn as much about every individual group, disability, disorder, whatever I can, so I can better serve people. And luckily I've made it 33 years and was able to retire, but I still find myself passionate about going out there and trying to reach out and making sure every single person knows they matter.
Yeah.
Now,
thank you.
Yeah. Your podcast, where if people want to learn more about you, do find out information, how do they contact you?
Definitely. And also thank you, Tim, for what you do. I really appreciate the work you're doing and educating everyone. So we, my wife, Sandy, and I have a podcast and a YouTube channel called Dyslexia Journey. It's the same content. So we post the same content on both the YouTube channel and the podcast. We do weekly episodes. Usually put them up on Saturday.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good deal. Well, I want to thank you and, maybe we can get back on. That's why when I first started, I was doing hour shows, but 30-minute shows, you get a lot of information and it affords you the opportunity to bring people back. So if you ever need anything from me out here in Virginia, please don't hesitate. And you've got Anthony Griffo's information, my producer. But just thank you so much for being here, and I hope to talk to you again soon.
Thank you.
Thanks.
This broadcast is produced by Griffo Productions.